Thank you for listening to this week's sermon podcast by Dr. John Hanna. It is our hope and prayer that you will be encouraged in your faith and in your walk with Jesus. Here now is the most recent message.
Well, it's that time of year for me again, where this week I have to make that dreaded trip to the doctor for the annual physical. You know, they say you're supposed to do that once a year. And so I tried to put it off, but I've got an appointment scheduled for Wednesday. You can tell I'm just so overjoyed and looking forward to it. But, you know, they have to ask you those questions, and we hear them every year. And I'm not looking forward to them, but I know my doctor is going to look at me and he's going to ask, "Well, John, do you smoke?" And I'm going to say, "No, sir, I've never smoked." By the way, my doctor looks exactly like Mr. Rogers. I just threw that out there. But it's uncanny. He looks and dresses like Mr. Rogers. I'll ask if I can take a picture of him and maybe show you. And then he's going to ask, "Well, John, do you drink?" And I'll say, "No, I do drink kombucha, but I don't think that counts." And then he's going to look at his chart, and he's going to look very closely. And I know what he's going to do. He's going to stop, and he's going to say, "John, are you still addicted to this Toblerone Swiss milk chocolate with honey and almond nougat?" And I'm going to have to say, "Yes, I'm still addicted to Toblerone, Swiss, milk, chocolate with honey and almond, nougat. I don't know what nougat is, but I love it, and I'm addicted to it." And he's going to have that talk with me about, you know, we need to eat healthy and all that sort of thing. All those questions, those dreaded questions. Life is filled with questions, right? We are asked questions, and we ask questions. And hopefully, the older we get and the wiser we become, we learn to ask the right questions. And so I'm in this series that I started at the beginning of the year on looking at the questions that the Bible asks. And all this came about where, towards the end of last year, I went to pray and I said, "God, as I go to read your word again in the new year, help me to focus in on insights maybe that I have never seen before." And he told me, "I want you to focus in on the questions that the Bible asks." And I've got to tell you, it has really surprised me just how I'm seeing Scripture in a whole new light, just by focusing in on the questions that are asked in the Scriptures. Questions that the characters ask in the Scriptures, questions that God asks. And it is really opening my eyes to a whole way of looking at Scripture that I had never conceived of before. It has been very eye-opening for me to really focus in on that. But before we go on into Exodus, I do want us to look at the last two questions that we see in the book of Genesis. Turn to Genesis chapter 50. And I just want to highlight these questions because, again, they're fascinating questions. And Genesis chapter 50, and the first question is in verse 15. Now, this is, you know, the end of Genesis, the end of the story of Joseph. And if you know the story of Joseph, you know that he was horribly mistreated by his brothers. I mean, you think you were picked on by your siblings. Poor Joseph, man, his brothers beat him up really good. And then they stripped him of his clothing and they threw him in a pit and then they sold him into slavery. And it was brutal. You fast forward many, many years through all kinds of different circumstances as God was with Joseph, and now he is the second in command in the most powerful nation in the earth at that time. He's a big shot, and now his brothers are before him, and he could do anything he wanted to his brothers. He really could. He could have had them imprisoned. He could have had them killed. He could have made them dance in front of him. You know, he could have done anything he wanted to. Genesis chapter 50, verse 15. When Joseph's brothers saw that their father was dead, they said, "What if Joseph holds a grudge against us and pays us back for all the wrongs we did to him?" If anybody had reason to hold a grudge, it was Joseph. And his brothers were rightly worried that what they did to him was going to come back to bite them. Don't hold grudges. Life is too short to hold a grudge. And that's hard for some of us. We need to learn to forgive. And if Joseph could forgive his brothers, as we'll see, then we can forgive those who wrong us. I know it's easier said than done. I get that. But when we hold a grudge, it just eats us up on the inside. Then we go to Genesis 50, verse 19. And Joseph is now lord over his brothers. Again, he could take retribution on them if he wanted to. But he said, "Don't be afraid. Am I in the place of God?" That's a good reminder for us. None of us are God. And if we think we can enact vengeance on others playing God, we are mistaken. But look at what Joseph goes on and he says in verse 20. "You intended to harm me, but God intended it for good to accomplish what is being done, the saving of many lives." What a powerful testimony of Joseph's gracious nature. To step back and see that all these wrongs that were done to him, God used in a powerful way to not only save his own family's life, but to save the whole country from famine. Powerful. And just by focusing on these questions, God brings to my attention a whole new way of looking at Scripture. Today I want to jump into Exodus chapter 3. And this is the story of Moses. I think most of us are familiar with Moses, but look at Exodus chapter 3, beginning at verse 1. "Now Moses was tending the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he led the flock to the far side of the desert and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. There, the angel of the Lord appeared to him in flames of fire from within a bush. Moses saw that though the bush was on fire, it did not burn up. So Moses thought, I'm going to go over and see this strange sight. Why the bush does not burn up? When the Lord saw that he had gone over to look, God called to him from within the bush, 'Moses, Moses.' And Moses said, 'Here I am.' 'Do not come any closer,' God said. 'Take off your sandals, for the place where you are standing is holy ground.' Then he said, 'I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob.' At this, Moses hid his face because he was afraid to look at God. The Lord said, 'I have indeed seen the misery of my people in Egypt. I have heard them crying out because of their slave drivers, and I am concerned about their suffering. So I have come down to rescue them from the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them out of the land into a good and spacious land, a land flowing with milk and honey, the home of the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites. And now the cry of the Israelites has reached me, and I have seen the way the Egyptians are oppressing them. So now go. I am sending you, Moses, to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt.' But Moses said to God," and here's a question I want us to contemplate today, "'Who am I?'" God, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? Who am I? You know why Moses asked that question? Because Moses had a past, a checkered past, and he was ashamed and running, and all of this caught him off guard. God, who am I? Let's look at his checkered past. Turn one chapter back to Exodus chapter 2, just a few verses I want to read to you. Now, when I say he had a checkered past, I'm not talking about, you know, tax evasion or money laundering or, you know, obstruction of Congress. He actually killed a man. Cold-blooded homicide. That's scary. Let's read about it. Exodus chapter 2, beginning at verse 11. One day after Moses had grown up, he went out to where his own people were and watched them at their hard labor. He saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his own people, glancing this way and that way and seeing no one. He killed the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. The next day he went out and saw two Hebrews fighting. He asked the one in the wrong, "Why are you hitting your fellow Hebrew?" The man said, "Who made you ruler and judge over us? Are you thinking of killing me as you killed the Egyptian?" Yikes. He didn't think anyone had known. Then Moses was afraid and thought, "What I did must have become known." When Pharaoh heard of this, he tried to kill Moses. But Moses fled from Pharaoh and went to live in Midian, where he sat down by a well. He was a fugitive. Moses was a fugitive. I've seen enough cop shows to know that fugitives are not good people. They're on the run for a reason. You don't want to mess with them. They've done some bad stuff. Last summer, there was a guy here on the church property, and he was sitting on the grass, but he looked kind of suspicious, you know. You just kind of get that icky feeling. But I went up to him, I said, "Hey, how's it going? Do you need anything? Everything okay?" He said, I'm doing good. But boy, he looked really suspicious. I mean, just something inside of me said, something's off here. So I kind of kept an eye on him, and then he moved from this part of the property over to this part of the property and just acting suspicious, and something inside of me said, I probably need to have the police check on this guy. They come after a while. Next thing I know, they have him in handcuffs behind his back and they're taking him away. He had warrants out for his arrest. These are not good guys. You kind of get a feeling when you're around people who are on the run. Moses was on the run. He was a fugitive. He killed a man in cold blood and then buried his body in the sand. Then God appears to him and says, "Moses, I'm raising you up to lead my people out of Egypt into a wonderful land." And the first question he asks God is, "Who am I? Who am I? God, of all the people you could choose, there are a million more people far better qualified than me." You ever ask God that? Who am I? God, do you even care about me? I mean, I know you're in heaven and you've got a billion other things to take care of. You've got a universe to run. You've got important people to look after. Who am I, God? I'm just an insignificant nobody. I may not have killed someone in the past, but I do have a past. Who am I, God? Why pay attention to me? I'm a nobody. I'm insignificant. I think many people struggle with this syndrome. Who am I, God? I have nothing to offer. I'm nobody special. Tomorrow, we honor a great hero in American history, Martin Luther King Jr. And we think of Martin Luther King Jr. as this great civil rights activist, and he was, and God used him in a powerful way to help liberate another group of people from oppression and slavery. And God used him in a powerful way, but Martin Luther King Jr. wasn't always like that. He was just an ordinary person like you and me. I was reading a biography on Martin Luther King Jr., and they went a little bit into his childhood, things that I hadn't known about. Let me just read a portion of his biography. Before leading boycotts, marches, and a national movement in support of racial equality, the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., as a child, was a prankster known as Mike or ML. When people walked down the street near his home in Atlanta, Georgia, he frightened them by tying one of his mother's fox furs to a stick and poking it through a bush, pretending it was an animal. To get out of piano lessons, he and his younger brother tried unsuccessfully to scare away their instructor, tinkering with their piano stool so it collapsed when the music teacher sat on it. He hated doing dishes. He loved ice cream and the board game Monopoly, and sometimes popped the heads off of his sister's dolls to use them as baseballs. He was an ordinary kid. As a child, he was required to recite a Bible verse at the dinner table before eating. And for several years, his favorite verse that he recited was the shortest verse in the Bible, Jesus wept. The point is, he was just an ordinary kid, like most every other kid. And as a kid, he didn't think he was going to grow up to be someone famous someday to bring about a movement of equality that would radically shape the nation. No, he was just a kid. And I'm sure there were times in his own life when he thought to himself, who am I? I'm just a colored kid living in the South. Who am I that God would use me to make a difference in this world? Do you struggle with this? Do you resonate with this? Because I do. It's one of the things I struggle with the most. Who am I, God, that you would even consider me for service in your kingdom? Who am I? But you know, God uses ordinary people to do extraordinary things. You just read through the Bible and you see how God uses imperfect, broken people to do extraordinary, amazing things. Let me just give you a quick rundown of who God uses. Abraham was old. Elijah was suicidal. Joseph, as we just talked about, was abused. Job went bankrupt. Gideon was afraid. Samson was a womanizer. Rahab was a prostitute. Noah was a drunk. Jeremiah was young. Jacob was a cheater. David also was a murderer. Jonah was a coward who ran from God. Naomi was a widow. Peter, a disciple of Jesus, denied Christ not once, not twice, but three times. Martha was a worrywart who worried about everything. Zacchaeus was small and greedy. The disciples, who were ordinary men, fell asleep while Jesus told them to pray and watch. Paul, perhaps the greatest evangelist in the history of the church, was a terrorist who persecuted Christians before he became one. And these are just a few examples of how God uses ordinary, broken, terribly flawed people to do extraordinary things. Who am I, God? I'm young. I'm old. I'm this. I'm that. This last week, I spent 2 days up in Salem with other pastors interviewing men and women who have gone through the educational process and want to become ministers of the gospel of Jesus Christ and become ordained as pastors. And in these interview sessions, we hear story after story after story of how God took this person or that person out of a broken home, out of an abusive home, out of a horrible lifestyle, and God was able to turn their life around, and they now have committed their all to Him, and God is using them and calling them to be a minister of the gospel, men and women alike. And I go to these meetings and I'm so on fire after hearing these stories of of how God is raising up men and women who He calls into the ministry, who come from backgrounds just like you and me. They're not perfect. And at some point in their life, they too ask God, who am I? But they gave their all to Him, and God is using them for amazing things. It is a beautiful thing to watch. I am teaching a class right now, a spiritual formation class for Nazarene Bible College. I have a student in my class, and I like to call all my students, you know, to connect with them on the phone. I have a student in my class right now. He's 72 years old. And he's on fire for God. And he's studying for the ministry, and he wants to be a minister. 72 years old. Who am I? God, I'm too young, I'm too old. It doesn't matter. God uses anyone who He chooses and who is willing to commit their all for His purposes. Who am I? Who am I? Well, let's go on and continue reading in Exodus chapter 3. Exodus chapter 3, verse 11. But Moses said to God, who am I that I should go to the Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? And God said this, verse 12, Exodus chapter 3. I will be with you. And this will be the sign to you that it is I who have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you will worship God on this mountain. Moses said to God, suppose I go to the Israelites and say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me to you. And they ask me, what is His name? Then what shall I tell them? Verse 14. God said to Moses, I am who I am. This is what you are to say to the Israelites. I am has sent me to you. You see what God did there? He told Moses, take your focus off of yourself. Switch two words. Instead of saying, who am I? Switch those two words around and say, who I am. Moses, stop focusing on yourself and focus on who I am. And I will be with you. And I will provide everything you need. And you will accomplish my goals and my plans for you and for my people because I am who I am. Moses, stop asking, who am I? And focus on who I am. Let's go to Exodus chapter 4. Beginning at verse 10, Moses said to the Lord, O Lord, I have never been eloquent, neither in the past nor since you have spoken to your servant. I am slow of speech and tongue. You know who else had a speech impediment? Martin Luther King Jr. I read that in this biography. Listen to this. Even though he was a prankster, he was very good in school. Got great grades. He actually left high school early and went to college early. He was a smart student. He skipped 9th and 12th grades and graduated from high school at 15. Smart guy. But one subject he did struggle with in school was speech. He also had a speech impediment, like Moses. And while training to become a minister, he received a C in public speaking. But that did not keep him from being used of God. And as we know, he went on to give what is perhaps one of the most iconic speeches in all of not American history, but all of history. I have a dream, and many other speeches as well. And so Moses also is complaining to the Lord, who am I? You're asking me to go and confront the Pharaoh and speak to your people. I'm not good with words. And then the Lord responds to him with three questions. I don't know why three questions. Maybe God is reflecting his triune nature to Moses. I don't know. But he says to Moses, who gave man his mouth? Question number one. Who makes the deaf or mute? Question number two. Who gives him sight or makes him blind? Question number three. Is it not I, the Lord. In other words, Moses, once again, stop focusing on yourself and your limitations and what you think you can or can't do, and focus on me. Verse 12, now go, I will help you speak and will teach you what to say. And that's God's promise to us as well. Take your focus off of your limitations, whatever you think they are, and God will be with you. And He will guide you every step of the way. That's His promise. Who am I that God would use me? I want to close this morning with an incredible verse for you to think about. Turn to Acts chapter 4. Acts chapter 4. That's in the New Testament. Acts chapter 4, verse 13. When they, the people, saw the courage of Peter and John and realized that they were, get this, unschooled, ordinary men, they were astonished, and they took note that these men had been with Jesus. You say, I've never had a burning bush experience with God. Moses had this incredible experience with God. I've never had that kind of divine experience. All you need to do is spend time with Jesus. Immerse yourself in the presence of Jesus. And Jesus can take unschooled, ordinary men and empower them with ability beyond themselves, and they then can turn around and turn the world upside down for Jesus. We are just ordinary people, and oftentimes we think less of ourselves than we should. The scriptures say God thinks more of us than we do of ourselves. Let's give ourselves to Him and see what God can do with a bunch of misfits like us.
Hi, I'm John Hanna, pastor of All Things Good, a church that believes in the goodness of God because God is the source of all things good. We are located on the corner of 18th and E Street in Springfield, and our Sunday morning service is 11 o'clock a.m. For more information about our church, you can visit our website at springfieldchurch.org. We look forward to meeting you, and I hope you have a great day.